Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation out of South of 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is June the 27th, 2025, or is the third day of the fourth lunar month, 2029. We will start our second service on this day. This is a Friday. We're going to have a song and a prayer. Alright, the spirit that originated evil and its manifestation today, February 21st, 1948, B.T. Hodder, Isaiah 2:22. Cease ye from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? In this verse of the scripture, Yahweh recommends that we cease from man. And the reason given is that man's breath is in his nostrils, because without breath he is but a lump of dirt, and therefore of no account. He is no God, for the pea would not have been made of the people, were not. Let's read that again. For the pea would not have been made if the pea were not putting their trust in man. If the people, let's read that whole thing again. For the pea would not have been made if the people were not putting their trust in the man rather than in the Yahweh for their salvation. That is, rather than doing what the noble Bereans did, studying to know whether these things are true or not, or be so, Yahweh's people are giving heed unto what others think or say, but they are today doing what the hundreds of thousands were doing in Yahshua's day, trusting in the opinion of the learned priests, scribes, and rabbis, for the Jews giving heed unto the heresy instead of engaging in the personal investigation and experience of their own with the source of the truth is therefore the very thing that crucified the Savior. And where do you suppose such a confidence in man originated? We often think that evil originated with Eve when she reached for the forbidden fruit. But the fact is that evil already existed before Eve came into contact with her. Let us read this from the prophet Isaiah. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nation? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into the heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of Yahweh, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation and the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. That thou shalt be brought down to hell and to the sides of the pit. Isaiah 14:12-15. But we understand that Satan's name before he sinned was Lucifer, and that he sinned before Eve sinned, that he was impersonated in the serpent that deceived Eve. We shall therefore consider the sin in the heaven before we further consider sin on the earth. For the Satan, we are told, was not the only sinner in the heaven, for with him were cast out of the heaven a third of the angelic host, Revelation 12:4. These were cast out of the heaven because they gave heed unto the words of the Lucifer unto a man in heaven, rather than giving heed unto the word of the Yahweh. This was the angel's downfall, for the Lucifer himself fell when he aspired to be as the Yahweh. For these two sins, trust in man and desire to exalt self, are still the leading sin elements now here on earth. This was Eve's stumbling block, and to many, even today, it is still the stumbling block. No appetite alone was not the cause of the Eve's downfall, for the serpent did not say, "Thou shouldest eat of this fruit, for it is wonderful, more delicious than any other fruit in the garden of the Yahweh." But he said, "Yahweh doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as the gods, knowing good and evil." Genesis 3:5. For the fruit appealed unto her, but she was tempted by the idea of having the opportunity to be exalted unto the throne of the Yahweh, to be exalted unto the same position unto which Lucifer himself aspired. Lucifer must have honestly believed that he would be as Yahweh if the angels in the heaven and the men on the earth would but take orders from him. And so we see that the devil deceived Eve on the same ground. He deceived himself and his angels, for the only difference being that he caused Eve to eat of the fruit which he himself and his angels would not eat. Consequently, Eve sinned against her physical being too, by the taking into it something that was not created for food, and consequently she died. But Satan and his angels still live. For this same stumbling block, the desire to exalt self, has predominated throughout the ages, and it predominates today. No, I am not making rash an empty statement. I have the facts to back up my words. For example, in the days of the Exodus movement, there were Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, who aspired unto the office of the Moses and Aaron, as Lucifer aspired to the throne of the Yahweh, the highest office they could have longed. Before, and did not Lucifer fail because of their warning to be above all others? for nothing more than to exalt itself, and was not the same true of the fall of Kohabetan and Abana. Today we see the same clamoring for the position even in our own churches, for the offices of the church elders, Sabbath school, superintendents, secretaries, pianists, and other such church offices. Let us remember, hold no monetary compensation, but in spite of it, every year, in most of the churches, as far as I have been able to observe, there is a clamor and a quarrel by the men and women for one or more of these offices. Since there is no monetary remuneration for such services, then what is the fuss about, if not purely for the self-exaltation, if not for the purpose of being looked up to as a somebody? You see then that the same talent for the self-promotion that existed with Lucifer, with Eve, with the others, down through the ages, exists today. My statement, you see, is backed up by the actual fact. Moreover, if such be the case with those who receive no monetary consideration for their services, then what could be the case with those who are well paid? For the question, you can answer for yourself to your own satisfaction. Find it. One who aspires onto a position simply for the self-exaltation, especially when such an office holds out the spiritual responsibility as does a church office, such a one should not be given any consideration whatsoever. And if he already has any station of the responsibility, he should be relieved of it. For such high-minded leaders are spiritually blind, and they draw the multitude unto themselves, as did the Lucifer draw the angels unto himself, and unto doom. Moreover, this class of the leaders dead to the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, and alive unto themselves, as a rule, love to parade, and even to exaggerate their religious creed. Such should therefore be branded as a Satan's inspired disciple seeker. This fact of men are naturally clever. They manage to gain the confidence of the people by the same method with which the priests and the rabbis in Yahshua's time received the nation. For they prayed where they could be seen. They marred their faces to appear to be fasting. They made it their business to err far and wide. Whatever good they did, they were adept at the making of themselves appear very religious, pious, philanthropic, and rises. Multitudes are still charmed by such the so-called good men and multitudes, and questionably accept their decision as if they were Yahweh's decision. Against such, remember inspiration one. Cease you from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? You have that in Isaiah 2:22. That these man worshipers be seen even more realistically, let me tell you something. Thousands have advised us to recant if the president of the General Conference sees no light in our teaching. If he sees no light in our revival and reformation among the Yahweh's people, they seem to be just as sincere in this as were the Jews who confidentially took sides against the Yahshua by the making the high priest decision, their own decision, whether it was for us to repent if the president sees no light, shows that they are copying the Jews of old, rather than looking into the matter themselves with confidence in the spirit. Of the other, to show them personally what truth is. They have absolute confidence in what man, the president, tells them. Was not this very spirit in the hearts of the men that rejected and crucified the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh? Obviously, this class of the person is not led by the truth, merely by the men of position. Such one never asks, is it the truth? But by whom is it advocated? And if it does not come from the channel through which they would have it to come, then truth is rejected. For they never stop for the thinking that the Yahweh is not taking orders from them, that they are not choosing the Yahweh's servants for him, and that the General Conference President was selected by men, not because of his authority on the scriptures, but because of his ability to command that the truth has never yet originated through him, that whatever Bible truth he himself has ever learned is only that which inspired men of the Yahweh have taught him. For the laity, therefore, have never had greater need to cease from men as they have this day, and if they do not reform, Yahweh have pity on them. It is to be remembered, though, that they are doing this foolish thing only because the ministry has so trained them, only because some ministers are in the league with the spirit that was in the core, vision, and abiding. When they ascribe to the position of the prophets, although Yahweh has not delegated them as such then too. When a preacher begins broadcasting the good deeds and accomplishments along with his religious experiences, also when a preacher rubs his eyes and blows his nose, unnecessarily as he preaches and endeavors to make his audience start crying, when you see these things in a preacher, know for certain that he is pulling the wool over the eyes of his listeners, that there is something up his sleeve. Well, I say, when you see a preacher doing these things, he is aiming to enlist your endorsement under something of his own. Beware. You may pursue the entire Bible, and I assure you that you will not find one of these things practiced by any of the prophets, for they never aimed to make Yahweh's people sad, but always to rejoice in the Yahweh. Take, for example, Yahshua the Messiah. For his work, his mission was greater and more important than any before him or after him. He had the religious experience that was worth telling, and if such a procedure would have been beneficial in the work of the salvation, he certainly would have taken advantage of it. Instead of preaching himself, though, he preached the truth. He never tried to persuade anyone by the talking of himself. He simply spoke of the Bible, truth, and gave Yahweh not himself the credit. And if anyone can preach repentance and love, he could, but he never tried to play on the emotions of his audience, never tried to sit them crying over anything. No one, moreover, including ourselves, has ever accepted the writing of the prophets on the merits of their goodness, their education, or their personal religious experience. For they wrote nothing concerning themselves and nothing to boast of their office. All who have accepted them have done so on the merits of their own writing. That is all. They never tried to win converts by what they themselves were or were not. Are they not to this day having success? And is it not the truth of the Yahweh that we must be after? For the Jews ask for a sign, and the Greeks for wisdom, but the Yahweh's people of today are asking for both sign and wisdom rather than for the truth. Let us therefore never forget that the spirit of the self-exaltation originated all the evil that we see today, and that is harder at work than ever before. We shall not give the dragon a chance to trap us and dump us into the doom with the third part of the angels who took hold of the tail of the old dragon Lucifer and could not let loose of it. let us ever remember that the lofty lust of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and Yahshua alone in that day shall be exalted. Isaiah 2:11. This is the end of number 28 of 2 Timothy 3. Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of Prophet Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of the House of Prophet Hall in the Elgin, Texas. Today is June 27, 2025, or it's the third day of the fourth lunar month, 2029. We're going to continue with our studies. We're on 2 Timothy 3, now number 29. And the title for this sermon is Revival and Reformation Crowned with the Purification. So it says, truth's decree on earth is a decree in heaven. The Revival and Reformation Crowned with the Purification. 2 Timothy Greetings number 29 by V.P. Harder. And we have a prayer thought entitled, Our Dependence is in the Yahweh, the Father, taken from Christ's Object Lessons by Ellen G. White, page 63. It says, for the people of the seed reveals that Yahweh is at work in the nature. For the seed has in itself a germinating principle, a principle that Yahweh himself has implanted, yet if left to itself, the seed will have no power to spring up. For the man has his part to act in the promoting of the growth of the grain. He must prepare and enrich the soil and test in the seed. He must till the field. If there is a point beyond which he can accomplish nothing, no strength or wisdom of man can bring forth from the seed the living plant. Let man put forth his effort unto the utmost limit. He must still depend upon one who has connected the sowing and the reaping by the wonderful links of his own omnipotent power. So we should pray for the wisdom, skill, and good judgment in the planting of the seeds of the truth, to know that beyond this we can do nothing. For the omnipotent one in whom we live and move and have our being is to do the rest. Okay. End of the prayer thought. Okay, so now once again the title to our sermon is Truth's Decree on the Earth is a Decree in the Heaven. Church of Address, February 28, 1948, by V.P. Harder. It says, our text is in the 16th chapter of Matthew. Again, to read with the 13th and the 14th verse. When the Yahshua came into the coast of the Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And they said, some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. Here Yahshua asked the vital question, who do men think I am? For the answer given him reveals the people's ignorance, for it seems that they should have known that thou sure could not have been John the Baptist, they surely should have known that John had baptized him at the beginning of his ministry. Moreover, Yahshua was preaching even before John was beheaded. Matthew 16:15-16. For he said unto them, But whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, Okay, let's read that over again. Matthew 16:15-16. He saith unto them, But whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, Thou art Yahshua, the Son of the living Yahweh. For the disciples themselves seemed to have been uncertain as to who the Yahshua was. Peter alone, without a moment's hesitation, replied, Thou art the Son of the living Yahweh. Matthew 16:17. And Yahshua answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for the flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. Peter received the blessing because he was the one unto whom the Father had revealed his Son, because he had been impressed by the Spirit of the sacred truth, and because he freely voiced the truth, having been endowed with this gift to his credit. Peter was told, Matthew 16:18, And I say also unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock, and I'll add my part, parenthesis, of the truth, I will build my church, and the gates of the heaven shall not prevail against it. For the words, thou and this comprehend two objects, Peter and the truth, the other. The name Peter in the Greek means stone. And so what Yahshua was actually saying was not to name the man, but rather to tell him that he was selected to be one of the stones in the spiritual structure of the church. Only on this rock, not on a stone, I will build my church. For Yahshua declared on which rock, for the Yahshua declared, question, on which rock? Obviously, on the solid rock of the truth which the Peter uttered, the truth that Yahshua is the Son of Yahweh. Then Yahshua made known that the gates of the hell could not prevail against the truth, that the gates could not keep in hell in the grave, even the dead in the Yahshua, that they too are to be a part of the ever-living church, the church that stands on the solid rock of the truth. Matthew 16:19, And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of the heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on the earth shall be bound in the heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on the earth shall be loosed in heaven. Well, Yahshua here declares that Peter has become a figure as a type of all of those who declare divinely revealed truth. Unto them, as unto the Peter, are given the keys of the kingdom. That is the promulgators of the inspired truth are authorized to find and produced by the power of the truth. That which they find on the earth is so recognized in heaven. For the Elijah bound that there should be a famine for 3.5 years. And so it was, said he unto Ahab, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according unto thy word. 1 Kings 17:1. Matthew 16:20. Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was as sure the Messiah, since the people knew not that Yahshua was the Son of the living Yahweh. Yahshua realized that the fact to tell them so would only make them the more prejudiced. He therefore charged the apostles to do the same as that which we today are charged to do, not to say flatly, we have the truth, for the message of the 11th hour. Instead, we are to teach the divinely revealed Bible truth, thus giving our hearers the opportunity for drawing their own conclusion, or to make up their own minds if they are honest searchers for the truth. The Father himself will reveal in their hearts that this is the 11th hour mercy. We must not therefore bluntly speak forth the all-important truth of the Yahweh. We must use good judgment and tact. We must sow the seed in a well-prepared soil if we expect Yahweh's blessing. If we expect his rain and sunshine to cause it to spring forth and bear fruit. If the seed is not sown deep enough, the plant will wither away with the rising of the sun. If we merely drop the seed on the top of the ground, the birds will pick it up. Matthew 16:21-23. From that time forth began Yahshua to show unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, be it not far from thee, Yahshua, this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and said unto Peter, get behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto thee. For thou savest not the saints that be of the Yahweh, but those that be of men is magnified. The aforesaid truth, Peter's binding and loosing on the earth, was acceptable in heaven only when done by the means of the divinely revealed truth. When speaking from his own impulses and sentiments, Peter was sharply rebuked and told plainly that his suggestions were not the truth, but were prompted by the Satan. It is therefore plain that the followers of the Yahshua may bind or loose only with the keys of the truth. They are to realize that truth alone swings open the gates of the heaven. Finally, if we have the heaven's truth for the hour, as Peter had it in his day, we then have the keys of the heaven and can with it bind or loose a truth, decisions on the earth, or the decisions in heaven. Matthew 16:24. Then said Yahshua unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. But this first implies that Peter's concern was more for his own life than for the life of Yahshua, for Peter knew that if Yahshua was saved, then his own life would be in jeopardy. Hence Peter was told that if any man would follow the Yahshua, he too would voluntarily consent to carry his own cross if the truth so decrees. For the apostles, we are told, did this very thing and were faithful unto the death. Matthew 16:25-27. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according unto his works. For the followers of Yahshua are here told not to shun the truth decree, though they be required to surrender their own life, for thus losing their lives, they will be actually saving them for eternity, for they will rise in the resurrection as the just. But for them to forsake truth in the order for the appeasing of the enemies of the truth, and thus save their temporal lives, would eventually result in their dying the death from which there is no resurrection. It should be of the interest to know whether the Apostle Peter was the first to be given the keys of the heavens, or whether others had the keys before him. Since the present truth committed unto an individual is the keys of the heavens, and since the teaching of it binds and looses things on the earth, and is so sanctioned in the heavens, then others must have had the keys before they were passed on to the people. For the earth, the church, and heaven revealed truth existed before the Peter's time. Take, for example, Noah. He declared that there was to be a flood, that everything outside of the ark which he was building would perish, and that everything that entered into it would live. Then the fact that heaven sent the flood immediately after Noah. Two timely greetings, number 29. Noah preached that it is proof in itself that that which Noah bound on the earth was bound in the heaven also. Peter, you see, was not the first to be given the keys of the heaven. After the Noah, we shall see that the keys were passed on unto Abraham. And since that which was to be bound or loosed on the earth had to be bound or loosed in the heaven, the three messengers from heaven consulted Abraham concerning the destruction of the Sodom and Gomorrah. It was then covenanted that if there be 10 righteous persons in the city where the Lot lived, they should not destroy it. And so it was, logically, after Abraham, the key should have been passed on to Isaac. Isaac ruled that Jacob should receive the promised blessings even though by the birthright they were to be Esau. And in spite of the fact that Jacob obtained the promised blessing by a fraud, heaven still sanctioned that which Isaac found on the earth. Jacob became the progenitor of the Yeshua. Thus it is that down through the line of Jacob came the Yeshua, and thus it that Jacob's descendants inherited the promised land, having in the possession the keys of the kingdom of the heaven. Jacob, at the closing hours of his life, decreed that Manasseh's birthright should be given to Ephraim. To this, Joseph protested by endeavoring to persuade his father to put his right hand on Manasseh's head, Genesis 48:17-19. But what Jacob found on the earth was bound in heaven. For the years later, after the death of Solomon, the tribe of the Ephraim, not of the Manasseh, ruled the kingdom of Israel. We see then that what Jacob found on the earth was also bound in heaven. Contemporaneously with Jacob, Joseph, by the interpretation of the Pharaoh's dream, found that there should be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. Thus it was that Joseph's decree was carried out bound by the heaven. And Moses said, if these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Yahweh hath not sent me. But if the Yahweh make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Yahweh. Numbers 16:29-30. For the Moses' decree was bound in the heaven, for the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. Numbers 16:32. For the keys of the kingdom, you see, passed along from one generation to another, from the patriarchs to the prophets, to the apostles, and on down to our day. For instance, about 60 years ago, the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist Church denomination declared that the General Conference was no longer heaven's highest authority on earth. General Conference, Bulletin 34th Session, Volume 4. That's extra number 1, April 3rd, 1901. Page 25, Columns 1 and 2. And thus it was that when the time arrived for the additional message, which gives power and force unto the third angel's message, early writing 3277, to be proclaimed unto the church, it came not through the general conference, but through the laity. This is proof positive that the keys with which Peter was invested are at work today. Only then, the keys of the kingdom of the heaven are in the hands of those who have the truth for the day. Consequently, just as plain as heaven can make it, the truth stands out that the keys of the kingdom of the heaven today have passed from the hands of the general conference into the hands of the General Association of the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists, as rarely as they passed from the Sanhedrin to Peter in the days of the Yahshua's first advent, so it is the truth decrees on earth today is the decree in heaven. This is the end of number 29. To two-time agreement? Okay. This is the end of our study for this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour, call us number 11, click on our audio archive.